The Talking Stigma podcast feature Garrett Thomas and me, Craig Doyle, talking to other well-known guests about stigma and how we can make stigma a thing of the past through knowledge and education. Listen to Garrett talking about his HIV positive diagnosis, how people have treated him, how he has felt since he announced his status back in September 2019, and how through scientific advances, being on effective treatment means the levels of HIV are so low in his system that the virus cannot be passed on through sexual contact. The intimate discussions draw on personal insights of Garrett and other special guests, comparing and contrasting their experiences of stigma.
So guys, for this conversation around tackling HIV, I'm firstly honoured to be joined by my dear friend and somebody I love and cherish as a big part of my life, Ian Green, CEO of Terence Higgins Trust. And you come to hear your story, basically, so we'll hand it over to you to start.
Yeah, so I think start off with when I first diagnosed, which was 6 years ago. It was just 2 weeks after my 21st birthday. I was sexually assaulted. I was quite unwell after the assault for a couple of days. And then I went for a sexual health screening and I got a call from the hospital just literally about a day after the screening asking me to come into the hospital. And I was on my way into work and I was like, oh, I can't come today. And they said, you need to come in today. As I went into the hospital and I sat down with the nurse, they told me that I was HIV positive on the test. And they wanted to do a finger prick test there and then just to double check. They'd done that and she was like, it can take 15 minutes. And it wasn't even like 3 minutes. Like, she'd instantly said, you've got HIV. And it was pretty much... Straight after that, I was just left to leave, really, the hospital, not knowing anything about it, not knowing anything about what was coming in my life, really. And then I had to go into work that day. And while I was in work, my team were like, you don't look well, you look really ill, like, what's the matter? And I was just like, I don't know. And I couldn't think, I was just complete mind block, I was like numb. Yeah. And that's when I told my GM at the hotel at the time, and she just said, I have no idea what to say, I don't know anything about it. And she was like, just go home, go and be with your family. I went home and back to my flat, and when my door closed, I just sat there for hours crying, because in my mind, I was dying. My life was ended, really. That's what I thought, because I knew nothing about HIV. I knew nothing at all. And then moved to Manchester. I just wanted to get away. I didn't want people who I knew knowing. I didn't want anybody to find out. And I thought the easiest way to combat that was to move away and start afresh, where nobody would know me and be able to judge me for what I had, basically. So I think that's where my life sort of changed a little bit, because I battled with it in my head to come to terms with the fact that I was living with HIV. I still at this point didn't know anything about it, and the coping mechanism was just go out and party, and that was my life for 7 days a week. Go to work, go home from work, party, and it was just a vicious cycle constantly. And then it came to really meeting Will. That's where my life took a turn, really, for the better, in a sense. Also, I thought that we were set up on a blind date, weren't we? Yeah. And it was like a new challenge, really, like if a new beginning. I didn't have to worry. And Will's from a really rough, well, I say rough, it's not a rough area. I say it's a rough area, because it sounds really bad. I say it's a rough area. It's not that much of a rough area, really. But he's like a lad's background, and Will had only recently come out gay. And for me, he was like a lad's lad. Like, he was always dressed in trackies and stuff. And I was the polar opposite. And I was just so scared of telling Will about the HIV. And I'd build it up to tell him of what I was living with, and I'd create scenarios, and I'd say to him, oh, if I lost my leg, would you still date me? And he'd be like, yeah, we'll just get me a wheelchair. And then I'd be like, go to tell him, oh, I've got HIV, but the words just would not come out. It just just wouldn't come out at all. And that went on for what, 12 months really, I think it was. It was 12 months that he didn't know. And at that point of him moving in halfway through those 12 months was, I stopped my medication, I stopped going to the hospital. I couldn't risk him finding medication in the house and asking what the medication was for. And so then I had the battle of my housemate moving out, and he knew about my diagnosis and he knew Will didn't know, and we'd fallen out, and I was so scared that he'd take control of telling Will about my status before I could take control of it. And then that's where it just sort of bubbled then, and it just got too much, and it got to the point where I went out for a meal and drinks with a friend to the theatre, and I ended up telling her. It was the same friend that set us up on the blind date, and she didn't know, and we had a really good chat, and we both cried, and we went to the theatre, and she thought everything was all fine, and the whole way through the production, I just sat and cried, because we decided that we were going to tell Will the next day together. And that night, I went home, and I was that scared that I took an overdose. And I think I was just more scared of the reaction from Will and the worry that he wasn't going to be there to support me. And that's when I texted you, wasn't it, and just said, you know, don't come home. I'd written my parents a letter, written Will a letter and my friends, and said, don't come home, just phone the police. And next thing is...
First thing I did was just run home. Mm-hmm. I remember now, my friend says, she was just running down the middle of the street, I've got to get home. And then she picked me up, and we got there, and yeah, he was unconscious at the table. And then it was just like a mind blown kind of situation. He was like, why is this happening? What's so bad in life that we've got to this point?
And it wasn't until we were at the hospital, was it, that...
It was only after being sat at the hospital, making sure he was okay first, and then I was thinking, oh, he's cheated on me, it's fine, we can work through it, we can do anything. And he was like, no, you don't understand, you don't understand. And then he told me, and he said, you know, I've got HIV. And I was like, okay, I don't know anything about that, I don't know anything. And I wanted to speak to people, but then I was like, trying to explain, AJ's took an overdose. And they'd ask me why, and straight away I'd just be like, this wall of silence, and I don't know, don't really know anything, don't know too much at the minute, so I'll just start happening, I'll ring you back. Yeah. And then everyone's like, I hope everything's okay, do you know why? And it's like, I think...
You just didn't know how to...
It took a while, for me to... I don't have any problem, it wasn't my problem, it was everybody else. I was thinking,
you didn't want to do you didn't want to break my trust by disclosing it, I think, wasn't it?
I didn't feel like it's my place to say anything either. I still don't think it is, but I think doing more, the more we talk about it, the easier it is for me to kind of
open up a little bit more.
Open up, because I'm a very close person anyway. That's why I didn't come out until I was in my 20s, because I like to keep me to me. And then I don't have to share that. Because if you don't share things, then you don't feel as vulnerable. But if you let your mind do its own thing, then you're more vulnerable than if you would just talk about it, I think.
AJ, I'm really struck, and thank you for sharing your story. Very, very powerful. And I know that how hard it must be just to relive some of that pain.
Yeah.
I think the thing that really struck me the most is just how alone you were. And that was just one of the things that really gets me in my heart.
I think that and loneliness and rejection is the automatic feeling straight away, is that everyone is gonna reject.
Yeah, that's the biggest fear.
Did you have, in the process of your suicide attempt, did you have rejections along the way connected to HIV?
Yeah, so I think when I first moved to Manchester, obviously you're on dating apps and things, and I'd disclose it because I wanted to be open and honest, and I didn't want to be secretive about it if I was going to be meeting up with somebody, do you know what I mean? And people, especially in that, I find in the gay community, they are very judgmental, and you'd get like instant blocks, or you'd get abuse. People would say that you're sleeping around, and that's what they wouldn't want to. They didn't want that. So for me, for like the couple of years before I met Will, there was so much rejection through the gay community of trying to find someone to be with, really. But then also in the workplace, I worked in hospitality, and you'd working in a restaurant as a restaurant manager, you'd try food and different things like with the chefs, and it'd be like one knife and fork, and I'd always get my own knife and fork to try the food, and then they'd be like, I've not got AIDS. And that for me, it just eat every time that, and it gets branded around so much that I die a little bit inside thinking, oh my God, they're gonna find out about me and that'll be the end of it. So very quickly, when I started to feel like that, I'd leave my job and I'd go and find another job, because that was said, and it said about 3 or 4 times in my career in different places, and I just left because I was so scared that if people think like that in the workplace, then what are they going to think about me if they find out that I'm going through that?
Like you saying that now, and I think back and I think these things probably I said, like I'd look at your CV and go, oh my God, how many jobs do you want? Like you could write a book out of your CV, and I never knew that was the reason why you were jumping job to job. It was like,
and I had very good jobs. So I was, I had management positions, and companies wanted to keep hold of me, but I was just so scared of people finding out and customers finding out and different things like that. And I was like, I was ashamed and I was embarrassed. I find that it's hard. And now we're at this point where I've put it out there to all my friends and family, it's on my social media, and I'm now taking control of the situation, and I want to help people who are in my position not to be scared and embarrassed.
So what did you do to take control?
So during lockdown, I typed up my feelings. I spent time just sort of getting it all out, because we'd not really taken any time after the overdose to discuss it really that much.
I think in a way we wanted to, you want things to go back to normal, but there is no normal. It's a new normal. It's a new.
You've got new stuff to deal with within a relationship.
You can't just say, let's just pretend it never happened.
Yeah. So I wrote about it, and then we decided that I was going to sort of turn it into a blog. And I wrote about it. I wrote a 4-page story from start to finish, from me finding out to the overdose and where we were that day, really, and published it on my Facebook and on my Instagram. Turned my phone off after doing that, and I was like, I don't want to see the comments until tomorrow. And I think we just got a bottle of wine, didn't we, and just got drunk that night. And I was just petrified.
Well, one.
One or two. Just say one, but yeah.
What was it like pressing that button?
I hesitated, didn't I? I was just like,
finger. And I think I remember saying, if you're not ready, don't do it. It's your choice. Like, and you went, boom.
Done.
Shut the laptop. Good. Done.
And it was done. And it was out there. And do you know what? The next morning,
you slept the best you've ever slept.
Really? I had such a good night's sleep. I didn't worry about what I was going to wake up to the next morning. I just put it out there, and I didn't have to worry about what. I didn't have that secret hanging over me anymore. And the next one I woke up, the amount of positivity, messages, comments, like there was just hundreds of inboxes, and it took me like 3 days to get back to every single person. And I replied to every single person just to thank them for the comments, because it really meant a lot to me.
Yeah, of course it did.
I'm reminded about Tenby and when you did Iron Man last year. and when you were going to do your post, and I remember getting a message from Gareth just that he'd sent his message, so it's out there now.
Yeah, but I was petrified. Because I don't know why it is, but we always, do we fear the worst because we think anything better is a bonus?
Yeah.
And that's what I feared. I thought there's only one thing can happen here, is I can be rejected, but at least I still got Steve. At least I still got my family, and anything else is going to be a bonus. But I'm interested, because I'm not sure right that night if I really took Steve's feelings into consideration. I think I used the word lightly, but I became quite selfish in that, okay, I hope I hope I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, what did, you know when you said you slept well, Anna, what did you sleep like?
See, I kept checking. I was checking the comments because I don't know it, as much, I just want to protect him, but then I don't want him to feel like he's, it's any different, but, you know, to anyone else's relationship, you wouldn't, you know, you're naturally protective anyway, aren't you? I think to another person, but it was kind of like an added layer, and I didn't want him to see any negative comments because I didn't want it to knock his confidence. But then I seen the positivity, and I thought, if there's one comment negative, I'm just going to say, look at the 200, 300 other ones. Yeah. And that's, I think I was trying to preempt what was going to happen so that I could be there to kind of reassure you, make sure you knew that you.
But it's funny you saying that you didn't think of your partner's feelings or how they'd. Because I didn't really think about you, and it was going to impact Will, because his family were going to all find out about it, his colleagues, his friends, because I had them all on my social media. So, but at the time, it was more so I needed to take control of the situation, and there was people that knew stuff about me that I wanted to be able to be the person to share that, and I didn't want someone taking that away from me, which is why I found it so hard telling Will.
Yeah.
And then putting that story out there was just a relief to then go to bed that night and be like, it's done. Like,
did you find life changed? Or did you find, wake up and think, actually, weirdly, it's kind of still the same, I just don't have a secret anymore?
It was, I was just like, I just woke up and I was just like, I just not got this niggling thing in the back of my mind that's there, like, constantly of, you know, you've got something that people may know about you or may not know about you. Like, I just woke up the next morning, I was like, I've got a normal day.
Yeah.
It's normal. Yeah.
Just wondering how that relates to your experience and your story.
I think there's so many similarities, yet I suppose we could speak to hundreds of people who've gone through the same thing, but there's something unique in your own story. Like when I think about how fearful I was, how much maybe the next day I thought was going to be completely different, but actually the sun still came up and life still went on, people still went to work. And also that I realized that you challenge something, you start a conversation, but that doesn't break down stigma, it doesn't break down misunderstanding. It's something that you either have to control and take control of, and then try and help other people take control of their own lives. So you just get on, you just got to get on with the rest of your life. And I think, you know, what these guys are doing is great, because, you know, we're wanting to tackle misunderstanding, we're wanting to tackle stigma, and there's places that we, or years that we might not be able to get to. And you know, I think what you've been through, what you're looking to do, which I commend in anybody, is you go through some terrible times and you choose not to be selfish and say, right, okay, I've been through my terrible time, so I'm going to chill out now. You go through, I've been through my terrible time and I don't want other people to go through that.
I've heard so many similar stories from people over many years about the sort of the fear they feel about being open and honest about what's happened to them and about their HIV status. And there's something about HIV that, because of the stigma that's associated with, which is ultimately just a virus, it has such an impact on people and how they view how society is going to react. And it's that sort of, it's about what people think other people are going to say or view them about. Am my family going to still care for me and love me? You know, how am I going to walk around the street without people calling me names, or all of that is just something that's so real for people. But actually, in reality, it's very, very little of that is actually experienced. But that stigma is something that's very real for people, and often it's stealth stigma.
It's a massive, part, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, with yourself, like, you beat yourself up more than what people actually would. Yeah. I feel like in my head over the years, like, I was always questioning and double doubting and different things. And I think it comes from, because I knew nothing about it. I knew nothing. And when I was diagnosed and I left the hospital, I still didn't know nothing. It wasn't until I moved to Manchester and went to a new clinic that I started to learn that it's a manageable disease.
And this is one thing that really makes me mad, you know, that that people don't know about HIV, you know, and that, you know, thank goodness now there's mandatory relationships and sex education in schools. You know, as you went through the school system, you should have been told about HIV.
Yeah.
And one of your great passions is about education, isn't
it? Definitely.
And making sure that people know about this virus.
And I think the thing is what you say there is, I don't know anything about HIV, yet I thought it was going to kill me. So when we break it all down, we all think we know something about HIV because we all think that HIV is something that's going to kill us.
Yeah.
Even though we say we don't know anything about it, we're willing to accept the fact that we know enough to know it's bad.
Yeah.
Which means actually we don't know what it's like to live with HIV in 2020 because, and I keep saying, and so many people, and I'm sure Ian comes across people all the time, who feel like they're educated because there was, you know, public warnings put out so many years ago about living with HIV, and so much has happened in the last 20 years of science and medicine that has progressed. So people like us can live happy, normal, healthy lives with partners and husbands who are HIV negative and don't put them at risk. And to me, that's something we should celebrate and something that should be common knowledge. But everybody's common knowledge is HIV will kill you.
Yeah. So
in terms of the education of that, like you just said then, we've all been at school, sex education, that kind of thing, all kind of, why don't we know about it then? Why didn't I know? If that was mentioned, why is it not sticking? Why is it not just ingrained in us from that age? And if they have taught, because I don't remember it.
I don't remember in school being told anything about it. Like, it was just basic sex education. It's girls and boys parts, and this is what happens to create a baby. That was basic stuff, really.
We've done a lot of work to make sure as part of the curriculum, HIV and sexual health is an important part of the new relationships and sex education curriculum because of... Yeah, people have a right to know because actually it would deal with a lot of this stigma and also the discrimination that people feel around HIV if they had up-to-date information and they were educated.
So Ian's obviously the head of what is an amazing organisation, something like Terence Higgins Trust. When you was diagnosed, did you feel like you had at the top of your mind somewhere organization you could go and visit or people you could go to online, or did you just think that this is something I have to deal with on my own?
I think when I first diagnosed, it was something I had to deal with on my own. It was more so it was more daunting of going to anywhere like that. I feel that if I was seen going through those doors, people would know, and I was like, I needed to control it and minimize the amount of people that knew what I was going through, which again, I moved out. There was nurses in Liverpool that knew, and there for me, and there was a couple of people in the hotel that I worked in that knew. For me, that was more than enough people that needed to know. And that's why I moved to Manchester. And I feel that if people know about these charities and organisations that will support you, and, you know, I just feel that the stigma of being seen going into through those doors.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Walking off the street, and then what if you walk back out those doors, and who sees you walking out those doors on the street? Yeah. It's people's ignorance of, like, you're scared of what people would think if they saw you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Like, it does completely. And I think that's about us making sure that our services are accessible, so you don't have to walk through a door.
Yeah.
And so you can go online, and there's an online peer support group for anybody who's diagnosed with HIV, or you can just go on the website and there's really good, easy to understand information available to people.
Because we went, didn't we, to
George
Health Trust. Yeah. So when I came out of hospital, it was when you were, we went to the clinic, didn't we? And Will had a chat with the nurses about my HIV, basically, and to talk Will through the steps and to reassure him that he wasn't at risk, basically. And they put us in touch with them, and we went for a visit, didn't we?
We went for a visit. It just wasn't for us at that time, was it? I think there was a lot more
going on.
Because you had to add in the suicide part of it as well, and then it was a lot, and it just didn't work at that time, whether it would have further down the line.
If it had been not for the suicide, I think it would have been...
Yeah.
the perfect place for me to take Will to and be like, look, listen to what these guys have got to say. Yeah. You know, this is something that I'm living with and we can live a normal life sort of thing. And I think had I gone about it that way, it would have made a difference.
I don't want to go backwards to go forward here, but on the suicide attempt, do you feel the suicide attempt was more of a cry for help or more of a way of getting to a position where you feel you have to now tell somebody?
When I think back on that night, it's very hard for me to try and understand my feelings. I had very mixed emotions that evening, and it could have been a cry for help and it could have been me trying to say, I'm struggling. Mm. I think it was probably more the fact that I was struggling. I think that when it comes to it, I think it was probably a cry for help.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, man. Yeah. When you do like feel like you're saying something wrong here.
Yeah.
Is it more like kind of there's no other way out, really?
That was
like,
it.
This is, you've and got I didn't like, want it's f- like D-Day tomorrow, I've got to do it tomorrow, yeah. Or I can not do it tomorrow. So
I just find it interesting again with a lot of people, and Ian will know this way more than me, is a lot of people have to put themselves to a position of rock bottom, yeah, to feel like there's now only one way out. Yeah. Even if you get halfway down, yeah, you've got to get all the way to the bottom with HIV, yeah, to find that way out.
Yeah.
And we're trying to stop people feeling, yeah, like they've got to get to the bottom before, yeah, they can finally, yeah, get out.
So I think about if there's anything I could have done to kind of put that net in place to stop you getting there.
Yeah. But this is why now we're wanting to share our experience, yeah, because I don't want people to get to the point that I got, because there was no reason for me to get to, yeah, that point at the end of the day. It was, we're still here, we're still together, you know.
Yeah.
There's no actual reason for me to get to that point. It was just all up here, yeah, and it was me criticising and worrying about stigma and worrying that Will wasn't going to be there.
So thinking about the experiences you've been through over the last couple of years and the very powerful story you have, what do you think needs to be done to educate people about HIV? What do you think needs to happen in terms of making sure that we can tackle the stigma associated with the virus from both of your experiences?
I think we've discussed, obviously, we want to get involved with charities and organisations to share our story. And us doing this and sharing our story with you, that's going to be going on social media, that will be then shared on our social medias for friends and family. And we want to try and encourage them to share our story with their friends and their family, and to just let that flow between social media. And I think social media is going to be a big key in tackling the stigma, because it's more people that listen to people like us
and talk about
that have been through, yeah, been through it and talk about it. I feel that will help end the stigma of the virus, really.
And Gareth, tackle HIV, so your idea of this campaign, what's your vision for tackle HIV?
Just to not have any more stories like this, because ultimately, whether you're in denial about living with HIV yourself, it's mainly because of what you feel the reaction, yeah, is going to be from other people. And when you start lying, you don't just live with a lie, you live in fear of other people, yeah, knowing you're lying. You live in fear of other people taking control of your life. So through Tackle HIV and tacklehiv.org, what we want to create is safe places for people to have safe conversations and to get correct information. Mm. And I feel like if you give people knowledge, then you give people power to make consciously the right decisions. And listen, we all know around this table that not everybody with all the right information is going to be supportive, but the majority of people given the right information will be supportive. Yeah. And I work on a majority, yeah, rules. So through Tackle HIV, we just want to create correct, positive information where we don't hear stories of people reaching the bottom and sometimes staying at the bottom, sadly.
It's giving everyone the knowledge, though. You know, like I said, I didn't know anything, and I would, if I hadn't met you, I'd know nothing now, and I could be just as ignorant. I could have been one of them people on that dating app,
yeah,
who,
yeah,
Oh, not messaging back.
And like, I think it's really important as well, right, is that we understand is that the knowledge of HIV is not just important to people infected or affected, it's everybody, because as a society, we all create spaces, whether it be in a hotel, you know, where somebody is not educated so they don't want to share the knife and fork or a door handle, or whether it be having a sexual partner, everybody has a part to play in safe environments for everybody, and that includes everybody living with HIV as well.
Yeah. HIV is nothing to be feared. I mean, it has a massive impact sometimes, but it's nothing to be feared. And you can have a normal life expectancy, and really importantly, because of the treatment you're on, you can't pass the virus on to your partner.
Yeah.
It's impossible. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's magical. It's magical. Magical.
One little tablet.
One tablet.
I say to people, tell people I take one tablet a day, and they think this tablet is like this huge thing that creates the container. I'm like, no, it's this simple tablet.
Tiny little tablet.
Yeah. But it does. It means we all sit around you with husbands, partners, family, who they know, and we know, are at no risk. Whereas prior to me having any knowledge, or prior to me meeting Ian and having discussions, I thought I could never touch anybody again. You know? Let alone have an intimate relationship with a husband who is still HIV negative. You know, like you have a husband or partner that's HIV negative. That was never on my radar. Never. I was going to live alone for the rest of my life.
Yeah, very similar. I thought that was it, me.
And how liberating that knowledge is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Completely liberating.
Definitely. 100%.